Hey everybody, this is Beyond.Paul Podcast, Stuff About Stuff. So today we're going to speculate on alien life. Not UFOs, not UAPs, not the craft, but what's, if anything, is in these craft, quote unquote. You know, just what the what, people. So, you know, it's a speculative endeavor. There's no direct evidence for, you know, ET. And there's been many, many claims, but no one has ever proved it, you know, and that's the more spectacular the claim, the more spectacular the evidence has to be. So let's jump right in. Microbe life on Mars. Mars has long been the target for search for ET. Presence of liquid water under its surface and discovery of organic molecules suggest that microbial life may have existed or existed in the past, possibly even on the surface of Mars. Okay, still zero proof, 0.00 proof. I am of the opinion, which you may have heard on my space podcast a couple of weeks ago, I'm done with sending robots to far distant worlds. Get in the bus and let's go there. One of the most disappointing things for me as an American and as a follower and fan of NASA is that we didn't go back to the moon. We didn't even build on the success we had. We just stopped, and then we started doing low Earth orbits. The space shuttle was fantastic, but stop sending robots to Mars. Get in the bus and go there. So ocean worlds, moons like Europa that, you know, orbit Jupiter, Euclides, you know, around, you know, Saturn, have subsurface oceans beneath icy crust. These environments might be suitable for simple aquatic life forms. Discoveries of plumes of water vapor, you know, has increased the interest in exploring these moons for potential signs of life. Now, both of those planets, Jupiter and Saturn, are not in the Goldilocks zone, the M3 area, where life will probably thrive. Neither one of those planets' moons are. But go back to microbes. There could be microbes in these ocean worlds. Exoplanets in the habitable zone. So there's been discovery of thousands of exoplanets, some of which are in their stars and habitable zone, has raised the possibility of Earth-like condition on other worlds. Conditions are right. There could be ET on those planets, potentially similar to our own. They're carbon-based. It's a potential, and we got some monkey DNA floating around. I am of the belief, B on Dot Paul Podcast, that it's not going to be anything like us. In resemblance, temperament, culture, I just think it's going to be very, very different. Maybe warlike, maybe peace-like. It may be a million questions. Extreme environments, you know, is another one. Life on Earth exists in extreme environments, you know, hot springs to acidic lakes. It's possible that alien life could thrive in similarly extreme conditions on other planets or moons. So that is definitely a possibility. Silicon-based life, you know, life on Earth is carbon-based that I just mentioned. It is conceivable that life forms on other planets could be based on different elements, such as silicon. Silicon shares some characters and chemical similarities with carbon, and it's abundant in the universe. Again, this is my opinion. If it's so abundant, why are we not sharing this planet with silicon-based entities? You know, we should have knowledge of the silicon monkey or the silicoid or whatever. Non-biological life. It's also possible we might encounter non-biological life forms. AI, self-replicating machines created by an advanced civilization that has since passed or moved on, and their machines are left there and they do their own things, and bada bing, bada boom, you got an AI planet. That is so far-fetched. I don't even know what to think about that. Non-biological life forms. I think we know something about our solar system, our planet and our solar system, and a little bit about the universe, but I'm not down with this whole non-biological life premise. And then, you know, extraterrestrial intelligence, the search for, you know, ET, SETI, involves scanning the cosmos for signals or patterns that might indicate presence of intellectual civilizations. Haven't found anything, and it's been a while. I remember they announced this, and I was a boy, literally a boy. And I thought, oh, I'm reading the paper next week about, you know, little green men, because that's usually what you think of. Little green men, you know, and answered one of our messages. Doot, 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 doot. They answer back. There was that famous wow message. I remember seeing many documentaries on that, and that's never been replicated. Also, they never triangulated that, so could have come from anywhere. Could be a graduate student, you know, smoking some good hash, or it was just a one-off. Somebody passing through our solar system shouted out, you know, a pass-by, who knows? But it's never been seen or heard again, that signal. Parallel evolution. When I was researching this, this was a different one for me. If life does exist elsewhere, it may have evolved along a different path, leading entirely unique and unrecognizable life form. This makes the search for alien life a challenging task, as we might not even know how to recognize it or what to even look for. So that's what I was saying earlier. I think it's going to be completely different. You know, I think the cats on this planet are probably going to be, you know, 50 foot tall and have three tails. Just saying. And it will be their planet because they're 50 foot tall. But, you know, that's parallel evolution. So they evolved, you know, in parallel to us. So it's 2023 now that I'm doing this podcast. So it's whatever numbering system they use, but they've been paralleling us. Well, they're probably as dumb as we are. They may still have the same questions. There may be a 50-foot cat podcasting right now about, you know, the likes of me someplace else, which would be so awesome and weird. In summary, I think the search for, you know, alien life is ongoing. It's definitely fueled by scientific curiosity and just curiosity in general. look at the mainstream news and movies and articles, and you'll see what I mean. You know, there have been significant advancements in astrobiology and exoplanet research, not yet found definitive proof of ET. Future missions and technology advancements will continue to shape our understanding, of course. Okay, so I think it's said that there is no proof. Okay, so, hey, B, what's the closest star to us? What's it called? So, Proxima Centauri, it's part of Alpha Centauri star system. It's the closest star system to our solar system. It's 4.24 light years from here. That's the closest one. It's a long way. It orbits a host star, Proxima Centaurus, at a distance that places it within the star's habitable zone. Boom, look at that. Conditions might be suitable for liquid water, which you need, the right amount of sunlight, the carbon on the planet's surface, and liquid water is considered the key ingredient. Yo. So they're only 4.24. So round trip is, let's just call it 9 light years. You may round it up to 10 for slowing down, pit stops. I don't know, stop for a snack. but one way trip, which it would be for a probe or a spaceship, starship, about 5.5, you know, light years. So it's going to be a long time. You know, the understanding of exoplanet and habitable zones is continually evolving with new discoveries. So just keep that in mind. You know, missions like James Woods Space Telescope, which is freaking awesome, are expected to provide more data on exoplanets. Now, I'm an astronomer. I have an amateur astronomer. I have a small telescope, just got a new lens for it. I go in the backyard. I look at the moon a lot. I look at stuff. I can see Mars pretty well. I can't see any of these exoplanets. And I'll probably never have a scope, can afford a scope that I can see an exoplanet. You know, I think that's radio telescope stuff or James Wood scope. So it's possible they may be out there. They may be closer, potentially habitable exoplanets that could be discovered. Maybe one being discovered right now. Who knows? You know, I've often wondered, you know, the zone, if you look at it in our own solar system, there's room for another planet there, Earth and Earth 2. Now, some people have said there was an Earth 2, and the reason Earth is here is those two Earths merged, and after that merging, the moon bloop, popped out. No one can prove this theory, but it is a theory out there, and there are a lot of scientists and laymen that believe it. You know, I love to speculate. That's what I do for a living. I love to come up with solutions. That's one of those who knows. I always thought this for a long time when I was a young man, basically with high-powered night binoculars that my dad had, because we would go out to the airport and identify planes as they came in. Being an ex-pilot, he liked doing that. You know, I often wondered about that as I gazed into the sky. Where are the other Earths? You know, I was like, we're Earth. There should be a mini Earth or Earth 2, somewhere between here and Mars. It would be cool. There'd be a stopover so we could take off, stop off at Earth 2, and then relaunch and, you know, see cousins on Earth 2, and then go on to Mars. I often wondered about that. So, you know, the Goldilocks zone, or the habitable zone everybody talks about, that's an astronomy term and an astrobiology term to describe a region around a star which conditions are just right for liquid water to be on the surface of an orbiting planet or moon. You know, Goldilocks refers to the fairy tale of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, where Goldilocks chooses, you know, not too hot, not too cold, but just right. You know, habitability is important because it's considered to be critical ingredient for life as we know it. You ever watch Star Trek? You know, those were the M3 planets. And I forget what the Star Trek terminology, but the three was the third planet off of the sun. And like it's a class M3, and they beam down. There's a class M2, they'd beam down, but they had helmets on. Okay. But you got to be able to inhabit. So you can go down like Mars. We'll go to Mars. We'll walk on Mars. And it's just going to be, it's a dust bowl. You know, some movies have gotten it right. Some movies have not. And we've had rovers up there. And I say, F rovers, we're done with that. Stop building them. It's a waste of money. Put that money into ships and put some humans in these ships and send them and let them walk around and look and judge and come to their own conclusions. And then while we're there, let's build a shack and hang out for a while. And let's keep the party going. Don't stop. Don't do what we did at the moon and stop. My two cents. Excuse me. It's a water break. Very refreshing. So without liquid water, you're doomed. You know, and that's a key requirement for sustaining life. Everybody knows that. The host star has to be like our sun. Now, this is what we know, okay? Has to be a yellow, I don't think we have a yellow giant, but it's definitely a yellow star. Too close, you burn up. Too far away, you freeze. So it has to be in that Goldilocks zone. But the star has to have the same characteristics as our star. And those exoplanets circling those stars, and this is why people are excited, are almost duplicates of our star, the sun. So if something's going on, it's going on there. And this is where people start talking about meteors showering down and bringing life to lifeless planets, which is totally plausible in the universe. It's also important to note it's a simplified concept. Goldilocks zone is simplified. Actual habitability of a planet depends on many factors beyond just its distance from its star. Atmosphere, the composition of what it's made out of, the presence of greenhouse gases. You know, life might exist in environments outside of traditional Goldilocks zones, but again, I don't think we would know to even look. Subsurface oceans under unique conditions. Even things that live in the ocean need greenhouse gases. There has to be some kind of troposphere, too, to keep everything from just blowing away. You know, a lot of people have speculated that Mars had that going on, But then one day its atmosphere, its troposphere, was just gone, just got blown away. Now, no one knows how long or when this happened, and there are no monuments or roadmaps, on Mars. Even though people think they see things on Mars, there's nothing there. Again, this is why human beings need to go. Scientists, pilots, specialized people, and they need to look around. And I dare say, after a couple trips, we need to start colonizing Mars. We need to get up there. We need to start moving around on Mars, start building structures. Not going to happen in my lifetime, your lifetime, maybe not even your grandchildren's lifetime, but a couple, 300, 400, 500 years from now, we need to get the F off of Earth because this can be burnt to a cinder. From there, from Mars, we can jump off to other parts in the universe or possibly the solar system. It's a great jumping off point. Saw a study the other day saying that someone was going to build a international space station around Mars. Okay. It's going to be hauling a lot of gear up there. And it's going to take a long time, and you may want to bring the shuttle back for that. going to need a base on Mars to support that. And that segues into, so how are we going to do this, B? Well, advanced propulsion systems have to be developed. They're working on it. Things have gotten better. If you watch what SpaceX has done, they're reusing rockets that we used to just like let go, drop off into the ocean. Now they're reusing them. They land on automated barges, and those barges come back to the SpaceX, and then they marry them back up with the next rocket, and they shoot them off again. This is a huge advancement. However, that's a very, very, very small concept. So, nuclear propulsion, solar cells, theoretical ideas, there are warp theoretical ideas being explored. This would need to be sustained in academia. And it's going to take a while. And then, with all, and you've probably seen this in science fiction, cryonic sleep and life support, given the vast travel times, 4.27 light years, decades or even centuries, technology for long-term cryogenic sleep or hibernation would be required to keep astronauts alive during the journey. Yeah. Bunch of movies about this, a bunch of episodes about this. The most famous one is the Botany Bay, Star Trek. And then later on, in later years, the Wrath of Khan. Freeze people, they wake up and go, ooh, wait a minute, what the hell? I think Enterprise did one too. Then there's radiation protection. I just heard somebody talk about the Van Allen belt going to the moon. Yes, they do pass through that. They shoot on by at, incredible speeds. And Van Allen belt, probably tops a minute, 2 minutes. And so it's like getting a X-ray. However, your sleeping astronauts could find themselves in a radiation belt that lasts for years, and that's going to be a problem because you can die from that. So shielding technologies have to be upgraded. I hate to keep going back to Star Trek, but Star Trek had the deflector shield on all the ships. You notice that big round thing on the front of the ship. That's the deflector shield. It moves particles, objects, radiation out of the path of the starship. So they, quote unquote, figured that out. Sustainable life support systems, closed loop life support systems to recycle air, water, and waste would be essential for long duration interstellar missions. Water recycling, food production, and waste management systems. This is a huge consideration. Nobody ever talks about this, but that poop has got to go somewhere. You know, people take a lot of flack about dumping their stuff in Earth. Start dumping our poop in, you know, the universe, I'm pretty sure that's going to come back to haunt us. autonomous systems. Spacecraft would need to be highly autonomous to make decisions, perform repairs, adapt to unforeseen challenges during the lengthy journey. So everybody's snoozing, AI is rocking the house, and the KYZ converter just went down. Well, AI is going to have to fix that without waking anybody up to turn their wrench. So we got a long way to go. Or we have a robot or an android like Commander Data, and he never sleeps, he never ages, and he has the sum of human knowledge programmed into him, and his number one job is to keep the ship going. That could happen. And then, you know, navigation systems, you know, for guiding the craft over vast distances, because if that goes down and you start going with the solar winds, who knows where you're going to end up. You wake up after 90 years and go, hey, where's Alpha Centauri? It's supposed to be right there to the left, and you look to the right, and you're plummeting into a Death Star, and not the cool Star Wars Death Star. Energy, which we were talking about, propulsion. Where is this energy going to come from? I always liked the solar cell. That seems... they have tested it and done beta, alpha probably. I think there's some beta going on. And it seems to be working. I go back to nuclear reactors. Don't care what anybody says. They have been the safest form of energy and highly reliable. Do your study on them, history on them, and see what you can find out, and get back to me. Interstellar communications. How are we going to communicate with Earth over these distances? So there's got to be relays, because even though we still talk to the Voyager spacecrafts now kind of off and on, it takes weeks for the signals to come to us and weeks for us to tell it what to do, if it even gets there. We assume that it does. And by the time it answers us, it doesn't matter, because it's slammed into, you know, a black hole or something. So we're going to have to figure that out as well. This next one came up as extraterrestrial resource utilization. I can barely say that. If a mission is intended to be self-sustaining technologies for resource utilization and destination planet, or in the interstellar medium, would be crucial. Okay, not really what I just sure what I just said there, but that's in the list that my research came up with. And there's gonna have to be international collaboration. It can't be in this us or them. Russia, China, USA, Canada, India, Great Britain, Sweden, you know, Mongolia probably has something going on. everybody is going to have to be represented. We're going to have to get everybody together. We want the best, the brightest to work on this, because this is going to be long-term. This is going to be long-term on Earth, long-term out in space, and it's going to take all of us to do this. I know we can do it. It's just, when are we going to do it? How we're going to do it? And, you know, making sure that it gets done the right way. Of course, we'll make mistakes. I think it's great that people like Musk and even the Jeff Bezos and the other guy, the Virgin Galactic guy, excuse me, are all working on this, and NASA is working on this, and the European Space Agency. Competition is good. I'm all about competition. I think competition is right on, actually. So that's my rant on that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Now, has alien life arrived on Earth? More speculation falls into the realm of science fiction rather than established scientific theory. There is no data to suggest that this has happened. There are stories, there are wacky videos. The whole Roswell thing was debunked, and then it wasn't, and then it came back, and now it's not, and now it is. You either believe or you don't. Heard somebody say that it was like faith. You either believe or you don't. Okay, it's not a faith, but the belief or not belief, I could see, could be like faith. I could see what they were saying there. Water break. We talked about earlier meteors bringing life to Earth. And that is widespread. A lot of people believe that. Meteors, comets, asteroids, spacecraft crashing, and then that stuff oozing into the ground and growing. I don't know. It could have been seeded by microorganisms or organic molecules that arrived from comets or meteors billions of years ago. Could have. Ancient extraterrestrial civilizations. Some people speculate that extraterrestrial civilizations existed in our galaxy long before humanity. They came here in ancient times, leaving behind artifacts and even influencing human evolution and culture. You know, I've watched those silly shows, and I don't believe that. I've always, you know, believed that humanity has done everything on Earth. We are the Earthlings. And I always say this question. Okay, so you believe that. What happened to them? Why'd they leave? Nothing wrong with the planet. It's not messed up. Did the monkeys get too smart and had to leave because we figured them out, monkey guys, and killed them all off? Why did they leave? There's never any of that. I've seen forums and papers, and it's always, oh, they came here, and they built the pyramids, and they built this, and they did that, and it's all over the world, similarity. It can't be coincidence. Yes, it is coincidence. I think we evolved in many places over the Earth in parallel. And you can read anything into anything, but I don't think ancient astronauts came here. Again, prove it. And then the extraterrestrial microbes, microscopic life forms, you know, I think they call them xenophobes or xenophiles, arrived on Earth, you know, aboard meteors and celestial bodies that we talked about. I believe that over you know, ancient astronauts. And then also, why are there no fossils, you know, of any of these people? If they lived here and they died here, they went into the Earth, none of them are available to be studied, you know. Why don't we have fossils? Why don't any of these ancient civilizations have their skulls and their bones, like are venerated in our friend the Catholic Church? Just go to Rome or someplace in Europe, and they got catacombs and they got a bunch of bones. And some of their bones are, you know, saints, quote unquote saints, that the Catholic Church deified. And then UFOs, ancient aliens. Some individuals have speculated UFOs observed throughout history can be evidence of extraterrestrial visitation. Again, prove it. There has been some compelling stories. Recently, some guys went to Congress and spoke on this. They seem credible, but again, gave no proof. Again, could not say what they said they had, but only in a SID, whatever that is, some kind of secret squirrel meeting with a Congress member. And those have not happened yet, because Congress not going to listen to this nonsense. And if it did happen, they're not going to tell us. I am of the opinion, after thinking about this and watching those videos, that yes, you're right. No human life form could do what the gimbal craft does or what the TikTok does. Nothing could live inside that thing. So, B, on Dot Paul Podcast, thinks that these are some kind of probes. And if they are, that is why we have trouble photographing them. That's why we have trouble chasing them. And they toy with us. And they're probing us. A lot of these reports have come out that these cubes that they see have something around the cube, some kind of quote-unquote protective coating or shell. Okay. And they whiz by and the cube stays where it is, but they can see this outer shell. It's not moving. It's not reflecting light. Maybe because it's turned off, they have to turn it off to move that fast. But when they slow down, they stop, they turn on the opaque, and it just disappears. It can be one over your house right now. You never know. So again, zero evidence. Until there is evidence, all we can do is speculate, imagine, postulate, and argue with one another about it. So, UFOs, a UFO is a, you know, unidentified flying object. A UAP is unidentified aerial phenomenon. Kind of the same thing. I think the concepts are the same. Some are military. UAPs was coined by a military guy. UFO, I forget his name. Arnold was the pilot's name, I believe, out on the in Washington State that saw the skipping discs and called them flying saucers, and later they were unidentified flying objects. So some general principles that we have to remember is verify the contact. Any claim, contact, or evidence of ET should be rigorously verified and subject to independent scientific scrutiny. to rule out hoaxes or misidentification. Fire in the Sky is very compelling because, you know, in Snowflake, Arizona, that happened. Read the book, read the document, and then watch the movie. The movie is not as good as the book, obviously. No movie is. And the only evidence they have is all the guys on the crew who said they saw what they saw passed the lie detectors, all of them. So stew on that. Still, and then he was gone for 5 days, I think, and then reappeared. Classic hoax, if you think about it. Classic X-Files, if you think about it. Again, no evidence. He had no marks on him, no wearing the same clothes, too. No burns, no... he couldn't stand the sunlight for many weeks, and it kind of tripped him out. It kind of tripped his friends out. Drove one of his friends into seclusion for many years. And then you report this. You know, credible sightings or contact made should be reported to the right authorities, either government or space exploration or scientific or all of them. We're going to need international collaboration, governments, space agencies, scientific organizations. You know, MUFON comes to mind, Mutual UFO Network. They need to know. Containment and quarantine. If something has come here from off planet, it needs to be contained and then it needs to be quarantined. They may be cool, but we don't know. What you think is a hairy underarm could be a problem. There is the what they call Brazil's Roswell, where there was a crash and then something was walking around in the city. Many people saw it. Many people fell ill. And they had it in a hospital, and it got out, escaped, or somebody took it out, and they couldn't get the smell out of the hospital, and they had to fumigate that floor and scrub it, and then industrial scrub it, and then I think they stopped using it. To this day, just fans blow in and out. And the floor above it is not a place you want to be. Communication. In the event the contact with an extraterrestrial begins, there are communication protocols that should be established. You know, mathematics, science, attempts to establish a common language or mode of communications. If it was me, I'd put not my hands above my head like I was surrendering. I would show my hands back and forth so it knew I wasn't carrying anything. And then I would turn around in a circle so it saw that I wasn't had a shotgun on my back. Not that it would know what a shotgun is, but just that I'm cool, you're cool. Also, to see if it mimicked me, we're communicating. Transparency. I love this word. Governments, organizations should strive for to be transparent with the public. Okay. That has never happened, and I don't think that will happen. Every government on the planet thinks they know better, and they do not. And then scientific study. If this happens, we need to study either microbial or intelligent. We need to check it out. We need to talk to it. We need to hang out, strive to learn as much as possible about these life forms and, you know, their environment. And that's the great things like, hey, okay, we've been talking and you said that your civilization is 300 million years old. how'd you do without blowing yourselves up? And where's this fuel for your rocket ships? Because we need some of that. And avoid assumptions. This is a pretty good one. You know, their intentions, capabilities, their nature. You know, a cautious and scientific approach is essential. A lot of people assume that everything's cool. I don't assume that for a minute. I think everything's uncool. Everything's uncool on this planet. You know, you kind of think that, you know, if one and one are two, and two and two are four, that things are going to be uncool other places. And you may get a cool alien, but you may get the uncool alien, and that may be why the uncool alien's here. Think about it. Yeah. You know, they come down here to Monkey Boy Planet, and they're like, oh, yeah, they'll be my slaves within 6 months. Careful. Careful, humans. So as we know, the search is ongoing. Excuse me, I need some water. Okay. It's an ongoing search. ET Life search is active and ongoing every day, every night. Variety of methods, you know, study of exoplanets, search for micro life, subsurface oceans on moons, like Europa we talked about earlier, you know, observation of the exoplanets in their zones, the wobble. They've noticed that these planets wobble, much like our own Earth does. So maybe these exoplanets have a summer, a fall, you know, a spring, a winter, because they're wobbling, turning on their axis, if you will, which would give a whole bunch of different environments, and they're spinning, and some of them are the same size as Earth. Again, the next time anybody talks to an ET, tell them to hook us up with the you know, the ABC drive or whatever they call it, and let's get after it. I'm a big fan of the exoplanets. I follow a couple of forums, and every day there's an announcement, 5 found, 25 found. Oh, no, that's wrong. And then we found these, and we found these. And, you know, the James Webb Space Telescope is really going to start staring at these and see what we see. Who knows what it's already seen and what hasn't been released. Astrobiology, the field of astrobiology seeks to understand potential of life beyond Earth, what we're talking about here, and then detecting it. That is key, to detect it. And I think everything that we talked about is we won't even know what to look for. So we have to have an open mind, and you know, there's some brilliant people out there. Some of them are a little, what's the term everybody uses? Pinholed, you know, they're kind of in a bubble. Need to like expand the bubble and look out and think of things a different way, because it may not be life carbon based, as we discussed. The Fermi paradox is a apparent contradiction between high probability of ET civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy and the lack of evidence for our contact with such civilization. This paradox underscores the challenges and uncertainties in search for alien life. You know, SETI is still going in one form of the other. They kind of shut it down and moved it. Paul Allen, one of the founders of Microsoft, who's now passed, built out in the desert, small array of telescopes. I think it was 40-something, not big-ass telescopes, but medium-ass telescopes, if you will. You know, they haven't found anything, but that's still going on. I don't think that's called SETI, though. The last thing is, you know, speculation and imagination, which is nothing anyone should ever lose. Keep those with you your entire life. You don't have to believe everything. It's good to imagine a lot of things. We've imagined these things for centuries, which have led to, you know, a rich body of science fiction films and cultural discussions like we're having right now. So those are my musings on alien life and a little bit of UFO stuff. I hope, like always, with my monologues here on Dot Paul Podcast, Stuff About Stuff, that you've learned something, that you'll go out and look something up, or better yet, go out in your backyard, find a dark patch and look at it. Here in North Texas, I go at around 9:30, sit out there for like 30 minutes to let my eyes get used to things, and then pop off the lens on the telescope and start looking around. It's awesome. Find someone to do it with, too. Find some person to talk to about this. That's fascinating. They probably know things you don't know, and you probably know things they don't know. So until next time, everybody, remember, accelerate with confidence.